So, of course, the question is why would, you know, how does that work? And whether that's indeed a good idea. But then you also find very often a person he gets himself into trouble, because if he does that, he's got to be very careful. If he's doing it in an area for which there is tremendous temptation, so then he could find himself in a situation where he really can't control himself, and then he wants a cigarette desperately, or he wants a drink desperately, and he's got an edit. So then you'll find very often people at crazy times are going to look to find a few other people to do some marketing, I guess. Yeah, there is a mechanism, of course, that I'll tell us about. Okay, but we're not going to go any further into that, okay? The only reason we're mentioning nether is because nezirus is something which is a specific type of a nether. It's a species of nether. It can only be established through a nether. So what I find interesting is that this whole institution of nezirus is really, it's a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of nezirus in the Torah. There's many laws that apply to it, but it's a bit unusual in that, generally speaking, the mitzvahs of the Torah are obligatory. Virtually, you know. All right, we have a few mitzvahs that, for example, you have Ben Torah Mora. That's a very rare exception that is really Mohaya Velo Nivra. It's supposed to be a situation which the Torah knew would not really occur. But it's there essentially for us to learn from. But that's the rare exception. Here, I mean, it's not clear what the attitude of the Torah is towards this phenomenon, of course, because you're not bound to become a nazir. I mean, all the mitzvahs have a certain level of obligation. And Alan talks about it in Ofos Brachos, that there's really two kinds of obligation. One is an inherent obligation. For example, matzah, sukkah, etc. All these are inherent obligations, of course, depending upon the time, but there's no element of optionality there. However, there are certain other crucial mitzvahs, which the Rambam calls them close to the shul, but they're mitzvahs. For example, mezuzah. Mezuzah really, he says, is very close to optional, because it's dependent upon a certain situation which is really not mandated by the Torah. But it's said, first month of Arab. Only if he has a house, which conforms to what the Torah considers a house. Or take a better case, for example, would be tithes. Tithes is dependent upon what the Torah defines as a garment, and the Torah is very strict, defines a garment as having at least four corners, and that's the only garment that requires tithes. Any other garment doesn't require tithes. So really, you can see the optionality. You know, we don't have those kind of garments anymore, so basically the whole mitzvah would be irrelevant today. Although we retain it because of the minhag, because it's of its great philosophical importance. So, you see that the structure of the mitzvah is such that there is an element of its chayvus there, clearly. It's just that the shiur kicks in under a certain situation, and the person, if he wants to, can avoid that situation. That is to say that aside from we have a minhag to wear tzitzit, but aside from that, there'd be no violation. That would be a right if the person were not to wear tzitzit, provided that, of course, he never wore those garments. Or the person lived his entire life in the type of domicile that wouldn't require mezuzah. So that's basically of the mitzvah. But as you see, but the mitzvah does have a form. It has a chiyuv. But that chiyuv is totally in a certain condition. But what about nazir then? Nazir does not... What's the context of a nazir? It's just saying that if a person takes this vow, then this is what happens. These are the laws. But it doesn't tell you if he should take it or if he shouldn't take it, or when he should take it, or... there's no chiyuv. It doesn't seem there's any chiyuv to take this vow under any circumstances. So therefore, what you have is strange, in my opinion, because you have a whole system over here, and it's not clear what the attitude of the story is to this system. Any reaction? Okay, I just bring it up because, again, it's a matter of trying to show you an approach. That when you study something, well, some of the questions, some of the issues that have just been come on. Anyway, I don't expect anybody to be able to answer this question. I think it's, what you have to do is to first study the phenomena itself. And from the study of the phenomena, the answer perhaps will present itself. Especially when you deal with the question that was raised before, you know, why is the king the Karta? Which implies that there's some type of a sin involved over here. All right, we'll just proceed. We'll proceed now.
Rebbe?
Why
is there a need for this institution specifically? Don't you have this, this is called a nether?
Yeah, nether.
Well, I was saying, why does the Torah need to mention nether for? If the guy feels he has trouble, too busy looking himself in the mirror, right? Then make sure he knows, let's make a nether, not to look in the mirror.
I mean, you're asking that once you have the mechanism of nether...
Yeah, what do you need nether
for? You have to have a specific formula.
Yeah.
A particular time. Okay. That's good. That's a good question, and it's kind of in line with what I'm asking.
Ready?
Yeah.
Doesn't Rashi mention the connection between Sota and Nazir?
Yeah, Rashi says that. Rashi says that that's a Chazal. That one of the things they saw is that they killed Kula? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're asking the Yahya.
Right.
So what's the question? What's that? So what? So what would give you an insight?
So that would be a, right. So that would be a framework where you basically
yeah,
not be tired.
But if you mean that that's something which we should take into consideration, but I don't think that Rashi means that that's why the parsha was given. That the parsha of Nazir was given was contingent upon the parsha of Sota. That is to say that for those circumstances, whoever happens to be a Sota, that person has to take a vow to do it. I don't think so.
No, but not as an example, like something
that you can't control. I know, you're right. You can read something from Sota. I agree. Let's continue. We'll just do some basics. I just wanted to establish some basics. First of all, we want to know, what does the term Nazir mean? And what does it mean, Lahadir Lashem? Let's just, that's the first thing that I want to try and answer. So let's go a few seconds. The Yayin Mishaykh Yazir. He should, Yazir, the term Yazir, according to all of the Persians, is Yakrish, a Prussian. Nazir, take a look at Rashi, Ned and Nazir, Ein Nazirah B'chol Makom Ela Prisha. The term Nazir is an expression of Prisha, to be Polish, to separate oneself, distance oneself. You check the Lundar Neda Nazir on the Sforno Bahat Rishatmo. Leo's Nezuru Purush. He says, Zunatanukim Hamogolim. By the way, you see, you go into the Sforno, you go into the other commentaries. What's interesting is that on the surface, Nazira seems to be a Prussian. But when you get into it, what's he really being mastered from? He's being mastered from mine. It's just one thing. Alright, and then he can't cut his hair. So he has to let his hair grow wild. Those are the two things. Then it's prohibited for him to come in contact with the corpse. But that's different. That's not the same idea. That's not a Prussian. That's a separate halakha that comes into play once he has the Nazira to crawl on him. So basically, it doesn't seem like that big a deal. I mean, just separating himself in terms of the enjoyment, in terms of Tylos, he's just separating himself from one thing, from one. And let's take a look at the... But I just want to understand how the term Nazir implies that. There's a nice insight over there. I'll get back to that in a minute. Then it says, Niyayin v'sheikha. He, from wine, and Sheikha is old wine. Rashi says, Yashan, the true Yashan. Then it says, Chomet Yayin v'chomet Sheikha. He's vinegar. of wine and the vinegar of Shefa, of old wine, lo yishter. The chomishras and oven, lo yishter. Anything which is some kind of a, I guess it would be some type of a juice, any water in which, you know, the grill has been immersed in, to the extent that it gives some type of a flavoring to the water, so he can't drink that either. Rashi says he can't dip his pots into wine. Then it says, I know the lachem evasion, lo yochol, it can't be any kind of grape, or even dried out grapes, or liquid raisins. Then it says, koyim in Israel, mikol asher yoyosa, mikgefen hayayin. Anything that's made from the gefen hayayin, the grape of wine, mechaytanam v'yadzeg, lo yochel. From the pit to the klipa, which is the skin, you should not eat. Alright, that's the discussion devoted to virtually every aspect of the grape. What do you find interesting about that?
But that's why you can't eat anything grape.
What?
Why is that a good example?
Yeah, what is the reason for all that? Yeah, we understand. Because wine is a kind of, well, wine is, you know, implies a certain way of life. It makes a person, you know, the drunkenness, whatever, that whole attitude. Interestingly enough, it focuses purely on one beverage. It doesn't prohibit other beverages that are mashakir, are alcoholic. He could drink beer, he could drink whiskey, he doesn't mention any of that. It just mentions one beverage. And interestingly enough, it doesn't have to be alcoholic either. I mean, grape juice would be clearly prohibited. What I find strange is, what is the reason for going so far as to prohibit the grape? What's the reason for the prohibition of the grape? Would you say that is a, that's like a hachaka kind of thing? Or like a fence around the law? Is that all these systems? The target clearly is wine. I don't think that the problem is grapes. Grapes per se, a person is, eats grapes, I don't think that implies any kind of a lifestyle of veganism. So, it's the real target over here is wine. Then it proceeds to prohibit virtually everything that's in any way, shape, or form connected with it. Now, the reason I say it's a little bit of a problem is that, first of all, if you're going to tell me it's because it's a halakha, well, which makes sense, that when a person wants to change his lifestyle, wants to avoid certain things, it's always important to establish a fence, a barrier. I mean, you see that by the Araya. You know, each of the Nidash Kumata will stick up a lot. That Legala Zavanta, that it's low sikra means an approach. You can't approach her. Now, according to the Raman, that's an Ithidia Raisa of Megia, what we call Megia. Megia meaning an Egia of a Chiba. That you're not allowed to Chiba Ganesha, you're not allowed to hug or kiss or any type of physical contact which is affectionate. Now, that's also, according to the Raman, it's an Ithidia Raisa. Because it says, well, sit down very well. That's Kilo. That's where it all begins. And one thing leads to another. Alright, so Ramban argues, and he holds that it's not a specific low concept, but he holds that it's a concept of the Ramban. But that we understand because you could see the connection. Everybody could see the connection. That one thing leads to another. So that makes perfect sense. Is that the idea over here? That is, now that they're prohibiting the iron, and we're just taking the same course of that low tip route, the approach. The only reason I have a problem with that, and see, tell me what you think, is that I don't see the same kind of connection between eating grapes and drinking wine at all. It's true that the two are connected physically, that this happens to be the product from which wine is derived, but in terms of psychologically, a person that I don't think people that eat raisins or grapes are any more likely to be wine drinkers. I don't think one is or the other. Wine is something that people are cultivated taste for, and they like it because it's, essentially because of the alcohol it's on. And wine has a certain type of significant hashiva. But I don't think any study would show that those people who eat a lot of grapes and use or whatever it is tend to become wine drinkers when they get older. What do you think about that? Hello?
Yeah, I mean, you don't even associate with a raisin with wine.
You don't associate with wine?
Yeah, I'm saying no one ever did that.
Yeah, so I'm saying, so what then is the reason for all of these extra prohibitions? And if you're going to tell me it's a fence around the war, it's a hard fence to understand, because I don't see the connection. Or maybe I'm wrong. I'm making that observation. I mean, to the extent with the pits or the dry skin,
right. That
is to say that a person eating that will experience a craving for wine? I don't know. I mean, I have to consider that a possibility. It doesn't ring true to me at first glance, but I could be wrong. I'm just bringing that up. Okay? I have an explanation, but before I go into an explanation, I have to eliminate the possibility that maybe it's just simply a offense. Okay, now, as we said, we want to understand the term nazir. Everybody says, if you have an Ezra as well, that the evidence of the nazir, the term nazir, means shayachik me'ataylo, that he should distance himself from the taylo. So everybody agrees that the term is a nitafresha. Bishop. Now, I thought it's interesting. Can anybody see in the very term itself, how it applies this idea? So just a little insight into Rosh Hashanah. What is the root over here? Well, I want to suggest that the nazir, the root would be Zar. Zar is a stranger. And I came one time said the word Achzar means someone who's cruel. He one time said that it's really a compound of two words, Achzar, bad, Zar, stranger. Which means to say that the essence of cruelty is really when a person creates a barrier, breaks down the identification with the other person. That's cruelty. Because you see, even aggressive people, but they have a certain compassion for their own kind because there's identification. So Zarus, this element of disassociating, like you paint the enemy as being, inhuman or whatever it is, subhuman, inhuman. It's the whole purpose of all that type of propaganda is to break identification. Because then a person, for most people, there is an emotion of compassion. It's not a virtue necessarily, it's just an emotional reaction which has to do with identification. So, Achzar. Now, I want to say the same thing over here. I want to suggest, similarly, that here too, you see how one word in Hebrew can have different connotations. That here too, Nazir is Afrasha. It means Zar. Zar means to estrange yourself, a certain estrangement. When you separate from something, so you render that thing to be something which is alien to you, which is alien. And that's where, in my opinion, that's what Nazir means. That Lahazir, he's creating a certain estrangement, and he's regarding something, and we'll soon see it's a very good reason, he's regarding something as being alien and strange, things that he should separate from. So I think that the idea is contained in the wood. All right, I'm going to go inside. You guys can probably hear the rain over here, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting strong. Nezir? Yes?
Me?
Yes or no?
No, I don't get it.
You don't get it?
I mean, he's to be a stranger to all these things.
Zar. Zar is to be to restrain yourself. Nezir is to render yourself a stranger to such things.
Okay. I got it.
Okay? Yeah, in other words, it means to say that you assume a certain attitude towards something. Something which you... Well, that's very important. Because something like a person is caught up in a certain lifestyle. So that's... You know, when he's caught up in it, it's something which is really beloved to him. Like, he really cherishes it. That's one attitude. But now the idea is that it's not just that he... When a person becomes a parish, it's not just refraining. If you just refrain from something, that's not necessarily a parish. You just start eating it, whatever it is. But more a parish means that he distances himself from it because he looks at it in a different light. He doesn't look at it as being a positive thing anymore. You see, it's like a person that if he smoked a lot, and he got lung cancer. So now he doesn't just stop smoking. I mean, he just separates himself. He assumes a different kind of an attitude towards that whole thing. Now he regards it as being an enemy, as being something which is alien to him. Okay? That's what I'm saying over here. Now, what does it mean, Lahazir Hashem? For the sake of heaven. Well, what does that mean for the rest, for the sake of heaven?
Meaning that he's doing it some kind of like abstinence emotion?
Okay. Yeah, good point. Yeah, exactly. That is, it has to be Lashem, that the Torah does not recognize, unlike other religions, essentially view abstinence to say as being a virtue. And only as one of people that it takes upon a certain attitude towards physical enjoyment, certain elements of guilt, it may not be conscious, but it's always there. There's something wrong with it. And because of this underlying attitude, so there's naturally certain respect or looking up to people at this extent. But you see that that's not the case over here. I mean, as you said, what the Rambam says, that abstention is really to be an evil thing. But forgetting about that, there's no kedusha over here. There's no value unless it's Hashem. That is the only benefit of abstention. The person just abstains. And that's their whole essence of their religiosity, that they abstain from enjoying the physical. The Rambam says that's sinner. It's a sinner. But there's certainly nothing praiseworthy in it at all. So if you take a look at the Torno, the Torno on base, Yafli, Yafish Atmo, Min Hevle, the Tanugos, Tanei Adam. Interesting. The term Yafli, because apparently the term Aflo also implies on Russia, even though the plain translation is, you know, to utter a vow, he's broken it already. He's not living it just for one. It's really a Russia from Havle the Tanugo. Tanugos are the kindness, the pleasures, the indulgences of people, the vanities and the indulgences. Then Lindor Nedo Nazir, Leos Nazir Uparush, min ha-tanugim ha-mudolim. He says that he's parish from the ordinary tanugim, the ordinary luxuries, you know, that people pamper themselves with. Then he says, la'adil Hashem, la'afrish atzmo mikol eilef, to separate himself from all of this, l'man yiyah kuhal Hashem, in order that he should be completely Hashem, that he's completely involved in the world of Hashem. So really, it's removing his energy that is squandered in all of these tanugim, in all of these luxuries. But it's asek to torato, to be asek in God's Torah, v'lo leches bidrachav, and to walk in his way, u'ledavka bo, to cling to him. See, this is extremely important. So he just means the word la'azil Hashem, for the sake of, so Rashi says, l'shem shamayim, for the sake of shamayim. But Rashi doesn't explain what this entails. Now you understand that obviously if it's going to be Hashem, so then it has to be involved in Torah. He has to be Osek in Torah. But so without Torah, what's he doing? Then, of course, it's not just Torah as a intellectual, purely intellectual exercise. It's really an attempt to improve his personality, his behavior, his midos. It's a transformation of the personality, which all has to do, first of all, he's got to separate, he's got to uproot himself from the world of certain types of pleasures, certain types of, really a lifestyle thing. I just want to, again, with the word Nazir, let's continue now, because there's a beautiful Evan Ezra over here. And then we'll go into a Chazal, and then, try and explain what the underlying idea is. Then it says, Kodimei Neda, we're up to Pasuk Ches. Kodimei Neda in Israel, Ta'a lo yavra rosha. Now the second thing, the prohibition, is the Ta'a. That means you can't take a haircut, so to speak. You can't groom himself. Ad malot ayam, until the malot, the fulfillment of the day, Asher Yadil Hashem, that he separates himself, that he's Mufresh Hashem. Kadosh Yehyas Kadosh. You see, so there's an element of Kedusha over here. Because the objective of the Afrasha is always to produce Kedusha. Yadil Paras Arosha. He has to grow the hair. Then it says, Kodimei Azir Hashem, all of the days of the Afrasha Hashem, Al-Nafesh Meis Lo-Yavah. That's the third thing. He's not allowed to come in contact with a corpse. La'avavu Ima Li'achav U'Lachoso Lo-Yitamalam. He's not allowed to be a Tamei even to a close relative. Which means he's on the same level as the Kohen Gadol. Now, what does this mean? He Nezer El-Okav Al-Rosha. That's a very interesting expression. Nezer, how do you translate that? The plain translation is because the crown of God is on his head. What is this crown? Now, is this word Nezer, Nezer Elokav, the crown, is this word Nezer the same sense, is it connected to the word Nezer, or is it supposed to have the same letter? It's a different word. Is it the same word? Is it a reference to Nezirus? Or no, it just means crown. Yeah, it's crown. You have this word, where else do you have the word Nezer? In the Torah, meaning the crown. By the Mishkan. But, they had to be, on the certain of the clan, the Aron and other clan there, Hamikdash, they had to have a Nezer. A Nezer means like a crown. Now, what is the idea of crown over here? There we understand it's like a golden type of, covering which surrounds the cleave. So it appears he's like to give it a crown. It's a physical crown. But what's the... How does that make sense over here? So there's a very interesting Evan Ezra. We'll do two Evan Ezras. You guys have the chumash in front of you, I assume, right? Good. The first one is on days, where it says neder nazir. He says that right in the middle there, sheyachik me'atayvos dinezru, that the word nezer is from the word dinezru, and again, it's the same idea, that he should distance himself from the taiva. Also, you see in the other answer that it's not just a question of wine, but it's a question of the taiva, of the love. The Asteja La'avodat Hashem, and you should do this for the sake of Avodat Hashem. Next is something very religious, this is what he says next. Ki ayayin mashchit hadah La'avodat Hashem. Because yayin, wine, destroys the reason, one's sechel, and one's Avodat Hashem. Then he says, V'farshat kisekin machna, ha'elaz v'chassar. We'll leave that. But that's, listen to that statement carefully, that the wine destroys the dog. You won't find that in any other religion, that the essential element of wine that he has to stay away from, which is the danger of wine, is that it destroys a person's reason. And the whole essence of the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, according to Yahadir, from Yahadir, is the mind. And therefore, if a person that does anything that's harmful to the mind is really jeopardizing his whole relationship with his circle. I mean, the importance of this issue is that most, no other religion would say this, but in most other religions, the mind really has no role to play. Essentially, it attempts to evoke certain emotions. I mean, you see a lot of Jews have that same attitude, to the emotional part, bring out certain feelings, and singing songs and that type of a thing. But you see, that to the contrary, that the essence is a clarity of thought. That's why, for example, in Tila, a person has a giant, he's now Adam, also goes follow. Shaker, of course, is Tila for Kaleva. Tila is a Kaleva. But a Shefer is one who is not drunk. But he had a drink of a Rabbiyah of Yayin, it's called the Shefer, it's utter when it's followed. Now, even though, as I said, he's not drunk, I mean, he can talk clearly, but you see that even a slight impairment of the mind, I'm going to compare it to like in driving like that, but you should not drive, even with a small amount. Because even though you feel you can control the car and all of that, you may be right, but the degree of control and reflexes is very, very significant. Because there can be a very dangerous situation where you have to like really exercise tremendous response and reflexes and so forth, and that little bit of wine can alter your ability, and that can result in an accident. That's why it makes perfect sense that a person should not, even if he had a small amount, should not drive. I would say you see the same concept, the same approach, that tefillah is so significant that a person has to have complete concentration, and any type of an impairment of his faculties would be detrimental. Because the essence of the Avodat Hashem is always in the mind, the clarity of thinking. That's the first Evan Ezra. Now let's get to the Nezer. He has a beautiful idea over here. This idea of crown. He says like this, that basically the term nezer is really derived. It's just one of the same, from the same term of nezer. This is the Evan Ezra on Zion. And it is the da, yichol b'nei odom, adei tavo ta'olam. You should know that all people are slaves to the lust, to the worldly lust. Ba'amelech ba'emes, and the true king, Sheyeshlo Nezer Ba'atarek, who has a crown of Malchus, a kingdom Barosho, who called me Shul Chavshi Ben Atayvah. says any person who's free of the title. That's what the crown makes him. It's a beautiful idea. He may very well come. It's a crown, but it's not a physical, it's not a visible crown. But it means that it's using the analogy of a crown. But the crown is what a king wears. Now, on a concrete level, a king represents someone who's free. In the sense that he's not subordinate to others. Those who are ruled by the king, they have a ruler. So the subjects have a ruler, so they're not free. But the king, ostensibly, he's not ruled by others. He's the ruler. But of course, in the true sense, in the true philosophical sense, the physical king is not truly free. He's not free because he's also a slave. Because he's, what the Evan Ezra is saying is that the whole existential condition of a human being is that all people are slaves, to the extent that they are not free from the pressure of their tyrant. So if a person is under the control of the tyrant, he's automatically a slave. And that's the ultimate slavery. If people look at slavery in terms of an external, because that bothers them, and the truth of the matter is that very few people are even aware of the internal slavery. The biggest slaves in the world, people are running around, you know, chasing after this lifestyle, you know, of hedonism and indulgence, pursuit of money and fantasy. They have no idea that they are really enslaved. They really look at themselves as being free to whatever they please. But according to the Evan Ezra, that's the real slavery. So the crown implies is freedom. He's like a king. He's free. That's the individual who's achieved the inner state of freedom from that which enslaves everybody, which is the title of Allah. That's the major alternative. I think it's a beautiful idea. Okay? That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a nice one. It's really a nice one. Make sure you mark down that Evan Ezra. Okay, so now, let's see if we can do one more, you know, main idea over here.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
How does this relate to your earlier question about the ring tips in the skin?
I haven't answered that yet. I just laid out, you know, we put out a lot of questions out there. Then we try and perceive, and if we establish, you know, an idea, breakthrough, hopefully we'll be able to put this in context. I have an answer though. Let's get back to the question. I mean, if we could see the structure over here. The prohibition against wine. Well, we'll try to understand that. Then we'll see if we can understand, you know, why all those particulars. And, you know, the cutting of the hair and so forth. Now, if you have a peritoneum, you guys ever said, if you have a peritoneum, there's a Gemara or the Gemara Nazir. I'll quote to you. I don't know if there's enough peritoneum to go around, huh?
Yeah,
all right, if you have one, if not, I'll just read it to you. The from the Gemara in Nazir, that's Dalai Lama's day. Talks about Amar Shimon HaTzadik. The Gemara says that in general, he didn't partake of the karbanos of the nazir, because he felt that many times a person would become a nazir for the wrong reason. But you see why. You see, it could be very appealing. There are people that like to go to these extremes, and they may do so for the wrong reason. So he's saying that there was a case. He wanted to illustrate a case of someone who becomes a nazir for the right reason. There's a case of an individual who came in from the south. He's saying, I am 12 really, he was a very good looking young man. With beautiful hair and all of that. Marji Lo, and he was an Ezer. Bini, Marisa, Bashachi, Sar, Narazir. He says, my son, what did you see fit to destroy this beautiful earth? Because at the end of the Nazirus, he's got to cut off all of his hair and burn it. Amali said to me, Reha Yisila Adi Bilai. I was a shepherd for my father in my city, Barachi Bishop Mayim Mayim. And I went to draw water from the well. By the way, you can look it up in the, it's brought down also in the Mincha Kunach. In the mitzvah, in the mitzvah, it says about the cutting of the hair. The Mincha Kunach quotes from out of there. A lot of things. It's not the Mincha Kunach, the Sefer, sorry. Kunach. This is in Shana in Dalad in the Achina in Parshas Naso. Gidol Sar Nazir. So he quotes the Gemara. He says, Miyamai, he quotes more than Gemara. Allah Shema said, Miyamai lo achalbi Hashem Nazir Tame. He never knew but eat from the Hashem of the Nazir. Parachas Bohadim, Echo Bechonim and Adaram, Yisim Yisayinayim, Vito Broi, who says of Suez Lot of Haram. On my TV, quote, he says that this young man was extremely handsome, and he had become a Nazir, and he asked him, well, what purpose did he see? Why did he do this? Interesting that he asked him the question, because why should you, there's nothing wrong with having a good appearance, there's nothing wrong with having nice hair, why should you go to the extreme of destroying your hair? So, he said, that getting back to what this young man said, he was a shepherd, and he went to draw water from the well. Then he stakalti b'ravua shali, and he saw like a reflection of himself in the water. Upachaz yitzri alai, and my yetzer grabbed a hold of me, like he was overcome by his yetzer, meaning his tithus, his evil inclination. Upikesh was herdaining in a olam, and it sought to draw me out of the world, to banish me from the world. On my Tilo, I said to it, meaning he said to his Yetzer. Obviously, it doesn't mean he literally said to it, but that was his response. Russia. Very interesting how he treats it, Russia. But if he was able to recognize that this element within him was something which is alien to him, separate, he treated it as though it wasn't the real him. See, most people embrace their Yetzer. That's their essence, is their emotion or their emotions and their desires. He said, Russia, Lama Hashem is there, the Olam Sheina Ushala. Why are you so hoody? God, Daiva. In a world which is not yours. The Mishu wanted Leo Dima to Soleya, with one who is destined to be worms in the ground. Avoda, Avoda is like a expression of a vow. She Adawecha Khalashamaya. I'm going to share, I'm going to cut off this hair for the sake of heaven. That's the end of his statement. So now, Shimon HaTzadik says, Miyad Hamadati. As soon as I heard this, I stood up, Unishaktiv Al Rosho, and I kissed him on his head, the Amarti Lo, and I said to him, Bini Kamotcha Yibu Medrenaji. Like you, there should be increase people who take a vow of Nehiyah. Alecha Akasav Omer. Concerning you, does the prophet say, Ish Tiafri Linda Neder Nazir Lahazi Lashat. But this is really Lahazu Hashem, which means to say that he was in general circle of people who took a vow of Nazirus, because as I said, a lot of people could do it just for the wrong emotion. When he heard his explanation, He said, this is the correct idea. So apparently in this story itself, you get a glimpse into the concept of it, and the context, and the question we raised at the beginning, and what situation is it applicable to? So let's analyze that chazal. What questions would you have on that chazal? Said the young man, what appears to you as strange? But as he saw a reflection of himself, I'm not getting into all these questions now, like he never saw what he looked like before, let's forget about that. Obviously they didn't have mirrors and those, but whatever, I don't really care. Well, let's just take the story as it is. That he got a glimpse of himself, and he said, how handsome he was. That's clear. And as soon as he said that, he felt totally overcome by his desires, and it was going to destroy him and take him out of the world. And then he rebuked it by saying that you're a Russia, you're a MacGyver in a world which is not yours. And immediately he decided that he was going to. Here the focus seems to be mainly on the hair. So he took a vow of Nazirut. But what are you thinking of? I'm sorry? You see something, of course, about the hair part. But in analyzing it, what's the question? What is a little bit strange in his story? Okay, so he saw himself, and he saw that he was good-looking. And there's a cause and effect going on. What's the effect of that? The effect is that he suddenly felt overcome by the taiva, obviously, the sexual taiva, and so forth. And the question would be, what's the connection between the two? It's one thing if a person sees a picture of himself and then he has an attack of vanity, thinks how wonderful he is, and so on and so forth. But why would he have an attack of his instinctualism, of taiva, and get the feeling that he can no longer control his taiva?
He can do whatever he wants?
Yeah. Good. Let me just give you an explanation that I came one time, Dave, and which is in line with what you're saying. That you see an important element from this. That when you see people living a certain hedonistic lifestyle, and other people refraining from it, so essentially a person thinks that it has to do with the power of the instinct. If people live a hedonistic lifestyle, it's because their instincts are being powerful. But the main problem a person faces in life is really, the ability to overpower the instinct. But here you see that that's true, but there's another element in Adam. That's the force of the instinct per se is not what determines the outcome. And that is what is more significant in determining whether a person will live one kind of a life or will live another kind of a life is really God. It's true that God implanted the instinct, but God gave us another mechanism that can really control the instinct. What's that other mechanism? And that's what a person really, it's important that a person be very careful, has to guard, has to protect it. And this is something which is really challenging, especially in our society. See, that is, a person doesn't sin until he obtains a certain type of a self-image. That's just the way Adam is. And what you see the world is involved in is the attempt to take something which is purely lust, purely physical, and to elevate that and to make it into some kind of a beautiful lifestyle. That's why you have everything today is it's transformed. And it's made to appear like it's attractive, it's a beautiful lifestyle. You see this in advertising, for example. I mean, you see it even on a mundane level, even if it's not necessarily sexual, although like everything today, practically everything is always involving something. But it's never that group is always trying to make it into something beautiful. They'll sell a car. So they don't just sell a car, they have a picture of a person out there, and the way he's dressed, and he's with a girl, and whatever. It's a certain jet setter. It's a certain type of an image. Now, when a person falls prey to that type of an image, then he no longer has the ability to control himself. As long as a person has a certain type of a self-image, self-image is being a Talmud Chacham, as being someone who's an Oved Hashem, so then he has the desire, but that becomes something which is contrary. I mean, you can't go along with the desire, because to satisfy his cyber would be to lose that whole self-image that he's nurturing. So that's the idea of Yigir. That's the idea of the story. Yeah, that fits him beautifully into the story. Because he said that as soon as he saw the image, the picture, so that gave him a certain sense of himself. I obviously, this is not a new phenomenon. This is not new. This goes back to ancient times, that people, you know, these emotions are all there. And immediately, he saw himself like a playboy type of thing. Now, once he felt that way, so there's nothing to stop it. Now it's going to destroy it. Take him out of the world. It means you embark on a whole different kind of a lifestyle. So, but you see, he was able to use the seichel, and he was able to recognize this and to separate himself from that. So that's why he took a vow of Nezirus. In fact, it doesn't really mention, in this case, it doesn't really go into the particularity of wine, but in terms of the prohibition of cutting the hair, I think the Furno says something. Let's just take a look at the Furno. Yeah, the Furno of Kyle or Yafra or Rojo. The razor should not go over his head. It was a Yashlif, Achare Davo, Komach Shevet Yoti, Hitzikon Da. With this, he sort of like kept behind him any sorts of that yoki, beauty, vanity, that whole thing. So now I think we can put together what the two main elements are. See, the reason why do you think now that wine is chosen? And as we've seen all the Mephoshim say, it's really that the Nazir is to be Torah from the Tanugim, from the Kaivos, and so forth. But it's just wine, it doesn't do with the other things. So that is why is wine so significant? See, what makes wine different than other alcohol substances?
Because wine is a reflection of the personality.
Yeah, wine is like a lifestyle. And that's wine signifies more than anything else that whole ability of people to take something which is hedonistic and to transform it into something which is aesthetically appealing. You know, the French is a fine wine, guy. I flipped it out of the Times yesterday. I'll bring it in. About a whole an article about wine sales and bottles, you know, this bottle from 1960s, and other bottles, how much they sell for thousands of dollars. I mean, it's a tremendous commodity. There's a tremendous amount, it's a whole culture. What it means to say is that once it assumes the form of being a culture, then it has an appeal, because the person is in a conflict. The average individual is in a conflict. Everybody sees that there's no way that a person can escape the conflict. And that is to say that on the one hand, he has desires. And he wants to repress those desires, you know, is painful. And of course, the desire, the power to increase. On the other hand, he has another part of him, the conscience and his guilt. So, you know, he wavers, he goes up and back between repression and then between indulgence. And after the indulgence, then he feels guilt. And that's where most people live their lives. We're going up and back. But see, what people are trying to do, in order to get any kind of enjoyment of the physical, they have to find some way of bypassing the guilt. And one of the ways that they do so is by seeking to make it something virtuous, like a cultural phenomenon. Now, once you have that, so then you can indulge. I mean, a lot of the art, you know, like it could be based upon just private, it could be based upon nudity, and there's a lot of the art has to do with that. with nudity and other types of lewd subjects, but as long as it's artistic, then it becomes the contrary, that it's a work of beauty, and you see that it becomes an ego thing. People that are connoisseurs of art or of wine, they look down on people that don't have this. You know, a person that doesn't know about wine, he's looked upon as not cultured, he's uncultured, he's uncouth, that kind of thing. So you see that wine represents this phenomenon, that it's the perfect object which reflects the indulgence in the kaivos, but indulgence in a manner which tries to make it into a whole cultural experience. And once that takes place, it's very hard to get rid of it. Because in the person's mind, to the contrary, it's a positive thing. So therefore, I think the yayin really means that, aside, of course, we haven't ever said it's mashkes the das. But that would be true. See, that would be true of any alcoholic beverage, and of course the individual should avoid them. But it's not specific to Naziris, because Naziris is establishing that which is the essential one. The essential one is really wine. There is no other beverage that has that type of a appeal. I mean, you see, wine is so chashuv, and such chashivas, that it's even incorporated in halacha. You know, kirsch over yada. You know, shira al-hayayin. Because it is true. If for whatever reason, we're not going into all the reasons now why that's the case. The fact that it has this type of chashiva, in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with it. But that's only if it's utilized, yeah. If you take it and you utilize it for the mitzvah, you associate it with the mitzvah, with the vote of chef. But the type of wine that he does here is where it's being used as part of a whole way of life, which is rooted in the taiva, but not just the taiva, it's the taiva where it's part of a whole cultural phenomenon. So, that I think, perhaps, that's the idea. The idea of nazir is that it's a transformation of the person. But the transformation of the person, not purely in terms of a certain instinct, but in terms of his whole self-image. And that's why it's connected to the two main elements in the self-image. The hedonistic, you know, the cultural hedonistic lifestyle. So that's very like the sophisticated type of a person, the playboy type of person that you have today. It really, so the two axes are, one is the external, the wine, because when you get together for these parties, it's always wine, it's always fine wine, that lends itself to this thing. And then there's the internal one, the vanity, the personal vanity, which has to do with the externalism, that a person is living his entire life based upon the full self-image of the external. And of all the different things, apparently, the hair is extremely, at the very point, the hair has tremendous psychological significance for a person. I mean, to women, of course, but to men as well. That, people are very masculine. I mean, anytime there's a youth or whatever, rebellion, you know, this and that, they right away express it by how they do their hairstyle. The hairstyle becomes very, very important, to a person. So, all that's there for, like today's society, the glorification of the body. I mean, that's what the hair really represents. It's using that as the one which signifies that idea. But today, the same thing, like wearing earrings and tattooing and all the complete fixation upon the image of a person, which is purely rooted in his physical, emotional aspect of the person, as opposed to the seminal thing. So those are the two things that have to be broken. And, of course, the entire objective of this time frame, in which is the amount of time depends upon the vow. You can take a vow for longer, but it can't be less than 30 days. And another thing for shorten yell. It's at least 30 days, because, as the first point out, that's the amount of time practice at least minimally, where the person can make a transformation. And the entire purpose of that is to be Kodosh Lashem. That he pulls himself away, from indulgence, any indulgence, in this type of a lifestyle. And like you pointed out there, obviously, it's got to be for the sake of utilizing all of those energies in terms of the Avodah Hashem. And in terms of being Oseik B'Torah and Chachman and changing around his entire way of life. Other than that, there's no point. I mean, there's no point in just abstaining. Just abstaining wouldn't do any good. It's really to obtain, to be involved in the correct self-image. The correct self-image should be that the essence of Adam is Kalam Elohim, and the whole objective of life is to be a Hashem. That's really what it's all about. In regard to this, I was thinking that perhaps we can now understand why the Torah prohibits every aspect of the grace. Does anybody have any thoughts now that we've elucidated it to a certain extent? Does it become a little bit clearer? The grape of the wine. See, the grape assumes a certain significance. It's teaching you this idea that it's a whole cultural phenomenon. That once a person is involved, not because, in my opinion, to eat the grape and to create the desire for the wine. Again, I think from experience that no one gets that yet. One doesn't associate eating the grape with drinking wine. Because the wine is something which is transformed. It's a completely transformed thing, and there's no immediate connection between the taste of a grape and the desire for wine. In fact, that's the bracha right to our government, because it's Ishtan Ruluya, which is why I think. It's really been transformed into something much superior. But I think that it's communicating this idea that a person that's living that kind of a lifestyle, then the grape assumes it's a certain significance. You see, people that are into this culture, and wine is part of the culture, so then the whole discussion about what kind of grape, where it comes from, and this, and all the other different things, these kind of grapes, and so on and so forth. So I think by keeping that away from that, that's the real reason behind it. To communicate the idea that this is not just a beverage, but it's something which lends itself to the establishment of a very small type of a cultural phenomenon that appears to be something of sophistication, but really isn't. And it expresses itself by taking now a person that's into wine, so he's interested in every type of grape, you know, this kind of grape, the other kind of grape, and therefore the target is not just the wine, but the source of the wine as well. Because it's trying to uproot that whole idea that this should be something which has any kind of legitimacy as a cultural phenomenon.
You see the thing with hair is true.
I'm sorry?
The hair? You see that it's true. People define, people classify certain people based upon what kind of hair they have. Long hair, short hair.
Hair is very... There's no question that hair is... You see that now. You see that? I mean, like, the long hair. Like, if the long hair became a whole big thing.
Right.
Yeah, with all your friends, whatever it is. And people wear their hair this way, people wear their hair the other way. And by the way, those, like, conservatives would frown, obviously it was rebellious, and those who rebelled understood that it was really part of the establishment. I mean, maybe it's more accepted now, but I mean, years ago, get a haircut, that would be response. Yeah, so that's the first thing. That's the first thing, there's no question that, because in doing that, when a person wears his hair in a certain way, again, it's an image, it's self-image. And usually it's for vanity. And it's not specifically for vanity, it's always for vanity, but it could be, because he wants to identify. He always wants to identify with a particular kind of a group, but the identification is based upon purely superficial phenomena. There's this emotion, the other emotion, and that's why he completely removes self from that. He lets his hair grow. He's not involved in that whole... And then later on, he actually burns it. He has to shave the hair completely. The shaving of the hair completely really reflects that idea that he totally does not see himself. He doesn't identify himself in terms of his external. So I think this is this is the basic idea. Now we'll just leave on this point. What is the? It would seem according to this Chazal. It would seem that the nether of Nazirus, the context for it, would be a certain situation where a person has a need. Where a person, I mean, this is what seems to be the Rambam, because this is the Rambam learns that the reason for the Chata is because, I mean, the Chata says, Vayashah Chata Ola Nefesh, because he sins. The Rambam discusses this in Deo, in the whole context of the fact that a person is supposed to live in accordance with the basic moderation, the golden mean, and he should not go to Achai, he should not go to extreme. And he says whoever goes to an extreme of deprivation, of asceticism, is a person. He's, I don't have the exact language over here. He says that, that's the derech of the, of the Avodah Zarah, to go to extreme, to denial. We discussed that before. But there's a very powerful emotion of asceticism that people have. And basically, a lot of people think that that's a good thing, to deprive yourself of pleasure, of any kind of pleasure, and pleasure is evil. That's a false idea. It's a completely false idea, because it's a negation of the will of God. It's the will of God that we have to exist as physical beings. That's the first phase, so to speak, of our existence. And insofar as that's the case, it's God's will that we should cultivate, of course. The cultivation has to be of the virtues and the telling of Hashem, but you have to tend to the needs of the body. And in order to function in the most optimum state, you have to take care of your health, and you have to, and the gratification of a person's legitimate needs should not be regarded. That's the idea of guilt is absurd. I mean, it certainly doesn't want a person to have this kind of a conflict that I talked about before. It should be, if a person relates to the physical aspects of existence in an intelligent way, removes the guilt. Unfortunately, I mean, even the yeshivas, I mean, actually, it just adopts the attitudes of the society to try and control instincts, especially guilt. So then the association is there. So these things are really bad. All right, so we have no choice. We have to engage in them sometimes. But that's not the real idea. If a person has an intelligent, rational attitude towards the physical aspects of existence, then, which would just say that the person engages in them not as an end in itself, not just to promote taiva, but as a necessary and legitimate enjoyment of things that a person needs in order to function properly, physically and psychologically, then that person should have no guilt whatsoever. You see, Chazal are not squeamish about that. Chazal says, "Don't make Shabbos." In the context of Shabbos, enjoying good food and so on and so forth, that's in the commitment. So let's not put that in a joke about that. And they even say that the conscious shamisha is a form of onik shabbos. So when a person takes that type of a conscious, rational attitude, so then a person can really enjoy the physical aspects of this world without sacrificing the true purpose. And that's the ideal that Yad is talking about. So the Rambam says that there's a raya, you see, that the Nazir who abstained only from one thing, just from wine, and he asked him in the Chatas, apparently that's what he learned the Chatas is. It is to say that there's something in the Zerus, according to this, it would seem from the Rambam, that that's not the ultimate state. But the Nazir doesn't represent the ultimate state. And since apparently there's a danger that a person might become attracted to that, and it's really contrary. The perfect state is a state where a person relates to the physical in terms of moderation. It doesn't go to an extreme, and then this does connote an extreme, because he's just cutting himself off from wine, even for whatever period of time, it's going to an extreme. So it seems that according to the Rambam, it's in line with his idea that if a person is suffering from some type of what he would call a spiritual type of disease, so then he has to go to the other extreme. Then the Rambam says you have to go to the other extreme and give it up completely. But then that just a means to an end. Then you cure yourself from this attachment, and then you have to go back to the course of moderation. So according to the Rambam, the idea of the chatas is because even though in this context it was right, the Nazir had to do this, it was a therapeutic measure, but it doesn't represent the ideal. It's contrary to the ideal. The ideal is that really we should live in accordance with moderation. And there's a danger that the person might become attracted to this and pursue it as being the correct thing. That is the extreme of abstention. Firstly, the idea of for the Rambam, then it would seem to be in the context of something which is a therapeutic measure. And indeed, from the story, the Nazir, about the young man, it would seem to be that it came into being for him because he felt himself losing control. And he sees on to the institution of the Zerus, which is Kaddish Rasha. The Ramban says differently. The Ramban says that the chatas is because he's in a higher state of kedusha. That when he's in Nazir, he's in a higher state of kedusha. What you see is Kaddish Lashem. And I want to mention also, in addition to this, to try and explain what is the reason why he's prohibited. That question is, well, why is he prohibited from contact with the maid? That's not he says that it's a good thing. It's better to be in the house of mourning than in the house of celebration, to partying and go to a wedding, because in the house of mourning, that would seem to be something which is beneficial to the person. That reminds them that the physical is temporary, and reminds them that he's mortal, and therefore he should be tshuva. So that's the question that arises over there. You good? I know, but that's okay. I understand. But you're not explaining that. So then you could ask the same question about the Kohen Gadol. I know, but aside from just saying that, could you explain the idea behind that? We're not really explaining the idea behind that. Because the question I could ask over there is, especially given the fact that Kavanah Meis and all that is a big mitzvah, I guess the two questions are interconnected. It just seems to me a little bit easier to deal with it in the case of Nazir. But I mean, forget about Kohen, guys. By saying it just like Kohen, you're not you're not really giving an answer in terms of an explanation. It doesn't give us any greater understanding. You're just taking something which is unknown, and you're applying it over here, the same unknown. All right, so we know the factor. We know it has to do with fiducia. Well, if it has fiducia, you can't have the contact with the mate. So we don't really understand it. That's one thing. See, in the case of Nazir, he's not a Kohen, but he's involved in this period in which he's sort of like, do you want to say rehabilitating himself or transforming himself and raising himself to a higher level, all right? Now, I don't know if you, with you on your own of thought, I said that's Kedusha. I mean, the person is, dedicating himself to Avodah Hashem. Would you have thought, see, with the Kohen, you're dealing with the Mikdash, you know, or the factors, but would you have thought to say that he should be prohibited from the contact with the maid? Given what the underlying ideas are, and what his problem was, the fact that he got too involved with the physical. So I think, logically, you might say, well, this is it, an additional support, the reinforcement. That's the kind of question I'm asking, you see? Exactly. That it's true. There's no contradiction. It is true that it's a good thing for a person to come in contact with the mate in general. Because generally speaking, a person is tied up in Hanlaya's mind. That's the whole idea, for example, of mezuzah, the Rambam said. That's the kedusha of the mezuzah, that a person walks into his house and he pauses and he thinks about the things that really are eternal. The existence of God, Yichud Hashem, the love of God. So, in the course of the ordinary day, his ordinary involvement is completely caught up. It's impossible, really, to be not caught up in the world of heaven, and you get carried away, and that's why you need something to bring you back to reality, to ground you. So, in general, most people, while they're about their natural way of life, even if it's a good life, but it's a reminder. It's something which they need. But it's much more significant to the soul to be reminded of your mortality. But the contact with the mate is really, there's two frameworks in perception. One is sur meira, that a person, first of all, has to turn away from that which is evil. So the contact with the mate is very good, because then he pauses and he reflects and he sees that this is temporary, and he'll turn away. He'll turn away from the excessive involvement in trying to make this world into the other. So that's good for that kind of person. But then there's the Asei Tov. Now, the Nazir is not just involved in abstention, but he's Kadosh Lashem. It's Lahadir Lashem. That these days are Kadosh, like the Torah pointed out, that there's a positive aspect to it, that he's completely, all of his energies now are devoted to one purpose, to being involved in Yitzhiyat Hashem, in Talmud Torah, and so forth. And I want to add that, really, if the objective is to effectuate change, and there's one other element over here that I think is extremely, extremely important, and that's the element of Simcha. But the whole idea, you see, this is the connection of Simcha with the Regel, for example. Yeruah, the Tmei Hashem, Shal Mei Simcha. It always has to be tied up with Simcha. The real perception is not just to do certain actions or to refrain from others, but to obtain the real Simcha. So I would say that's part of the whole idea. If you really want, to change a person from one way of life to the third way of life, and so then, after that, he experiences one, then he experiences the other, so, and then he's going to make the comparison. So the only way to really win a person over is to really is to show him that this is enjoyable, that you really get satisfaction from it. And that's ultimately the the most persuasive thing. So this Kodesh Hu Hashem is the real Kedusha. It's probably sort of saying like this, a kind of devil, that if he can say Hashem, so then he has to reflect a certain state of the Simcha of the Shnei Hashem. And to the extent that he comes in contact with the Nate, while that might be good for a person in a different situation, in a different context, it's not good for him, because he's not in that situation. He's removed himself, and now he's in a state where he's putting all of his energy into the, you know, into the Yediyas Hashem, into the Chachmas Hashem, and this would be a distraction. It would take him away from his objective. It would remove the energy from that, but also it would be something which would be felt as a sadness. It would be an element of sadness. So while this element of sadness is beneficial for a person who's going through the ordinary course of his daily business, who's involved in Havleyas Man, this is talking about a person who's removed himself from the Havleyas Man, and now he's in the arena of the Avodah Hashem. So then that would be a negative thing. That's why I think the idea of Kedusha, the idea of the ultimate Kedusha, is contrary to the idea of death. And we're all humans, and insofar as we're humans, this is a sad thing. A person obviously is going to come in contact with the mate, so it's going to be a sad phenomenon. So it's a distraction, and it's an element of sadness, which would take away from the real objective, the real purpose, which is not just that it should be cursed, but a person who's Kodesh Hashem is also experiencing the greatest joy. That's why he's going to prefer this life trial over the life itself. That's the ultimate answer that you have to give someone, is why a person should live this way of life, is because it's the correct way of life, but also it's the most enjoyable way of life. Okay?
Ready?
Okay, guys, so tomorrow I'll be back.
Ready?
Yes.
Ask the question?
Yeah.
It doesn't say that he's Hajar from a Baylor, it just says that he can't be in the comic. So there's still an element of sadness that he's going to go through.
Well, that's something else. It's the same issue of the Kohen Gadol.
Right.
That's the same issue of the Kohen Gadol. But the, that's something else, you know. That's a different phenomenon. It's mitzvot. He's not part of a mitzvot.
If he's a mitzvah to be mitame, then mitzvah to do avelos. So why is one to be puzzled from and the other he's not? If they're both refraining from sadness, the idea of a nazir is to refrain from sadness. So why is he puzzled from the mitame, but he's not from the avelos?
Avelis, there's nothing you can do about. You can't say he's part of my avelis.
Why not?
Because avelis is a reality. For a person experiences a loss, he's going to have to go through that loss.
But a guy who goes through avelis...
No, but you don't have to come in contact with a mate. Coming in contact with a mate is not even necessarily your own mate. I mean, that's a separate thing. That's a different encounter with a corpse. I mean, it's a big difference. I mean, a lot of people can't, you know, they have a tough time with that. They can't even, you know, they can't even necessarily be in the same room. I mean, not everybody can be part of the Chevra Kedisha. That's a different kind of a thing, I would say. Offhand. But you cannot stop Avelis. I mean, it's a, the only question, I guess, I mean, we have to know a bit more. There's a lot of other factors. We do see cases where the Avelis is postponed, as you see, for example, on the Rego. But I don't know if this would lend itself to that, because here it's a 30-day period. So,
No, but we see that sometimes it's pretty much canceled. Like, if you go through a day and then Rego comes, so then...
Yeah, but I mean, I can't, you asked me basically why you probably didn't remove him from Avelis. So it's a question, I don't know. It's a question. I'm just feeling they didn't remove the coin either from Avelis.
Right.
So it has to do with the phenomenon of, you know, of Nate and Tumas Nate. I mean, we'll have to think about it some more, but I think this is a start. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, guys.